Welcome to the Science Podcast. It's February 17th, 2013. I'm Sarah Crespi, and this is a special podcast from the AAAS annual meeting in Boston. The view that if only the public knew more about science, then they would get on board, enact policies to control climate change, embrace GMOs, and ignore misinformation about vaccines. This idea that the key to policy change is more information is called the deficit model. But research has shown that using the deficit model as the basis for science communications doesn't work. So how has this information been conveyed to scientists? I spoke with Hans-Peter Peters about his work surveying scientists about their science communication tactics.
My name is Hans-Peter Peters, and I'm a researcher, a social scientist at the Research Center Jülich in Germany, and also I'm a adjunct professor for science journalism at the Free University of Berlin.
Okay, so can you just summarize what your presentation was about today, what you were talking about at AAAS?
I was talking about the perceptions and the beliefs of scientists about the public and their relation to the public. And what we found in the analysis of data from two cross-national surveys is that there is a mixture of old and new beliefs, old beliefs that are traditional, so scientists disseminate their knowledge to the public, new beliefs, more dialogue, more public engagement, perhaps participation of the public in science. And what we found is first that there is a mixture of old and new beliefs, and that scientists are prepared to have the public look into science, but that they are reluctant to have them involved in science regulation, science governance, and so on. And the second finding was that if we look at age differences, one may think that the younger are more open to the new ideas than the older ones. We do not find consistent age differences in the way that the younger are more open to engagement beliefs than the older.
Well, so a lot of research takes place into what the public knows about science, the scientific literacy of the public, but you're looking more at the scientists' literacy about the public. Can you talk about a common misconception that scientists have about what the public thinks?
You asked me about misconceptions.
Yeah.
It's mostly about normative beliefs,
okay,
how they should interact with the public.
Yeah.
And I mean, they have a perhaps realistic conception that the public is not that scientific literate. And the question is, how should you assess that? Is that a problem? Is it a deficit? Or is it something natural? I mean, we have division of labor in our society, and science has a specific part, namely to produce knowledge and to advocate reason and so on. So it is not reasonable to expect that everybody has that. Otherwise, we didn't need that division of labor. So I think it is not a deficit, but many scientists obviously think it is a deficit. But that there is a knowledge difference between science and the public, I mean, this is quite natural. Otherwise, we wouldn't need science.
So what are some of the primary reasons scientists communicate with the public? What are they trying to get to the public, besides just knowledge about their science?
There is a multitude of motives, I think, and it has to do with that science and teaching science is very closely connected. And many scientists, I think, perceive public communication as a kind of teaching. As they teach their students, they teach the public. That's a very traditional approach. And sharing knowledge, I think, is inherently a positive value for many scientists. However, there are more specific goals, and there is a widespread understanding and probably true understanding that being in the public means advantages, benefits for scientists, for individual scientists, for scientific organizations, and for science at large, namely that the weight and the relevance of science is more acknowledged in society. And so many scientists expect benefits like career advancement, better access to funding, and more acceptance of the research, more positive attitudes, if they communicate with the public.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the kind of research that you do. Can you talk about what the goals are for your research? Are you looking to find out more about how scientists and public perceive each other, but also perhaps, you know, some tools or some advice for scientists?
I'm doing that kind of research since almost 30 years. Surveys of scientists, but also surveys of journalists. So in the beginning, it was, okay, how do scientists and journalists interact? And there was a perception that's a huge problem. And so we try to find out the reasons why that is a problem. And Sharon Dunwoody here in the United States and others have done that, and I've done that in Germany. And this has, in a way, developed to more general questions of the nature of the border between science and society and the position of science in society and the processes how the border is negotiated, so to say.
I thought it was really interesting how you talked about the difference between how social scientists perceive their place in society and how natural or physical scientists do. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. In Germany, we have a word Wissenschaft that covers natural science, social science, and humanities. So for us, it's quite natural to view all these disciplines when we talk about science communication. But there's a little research about the differences. And recently, we did a survey of German researchers from 16 different disciplines, ranging from humanities to engineering. And we found that there are different interfaces between science and the public. The social sciences are less scientific in a way. They are perceived as experts, and they are asked as experts to comment on policy issues, for example, or give personal advice or something like that. While when the hard sciences are covered by the media, it's more that they talk about research and projects and so on and so forth. So in a way, the border between science and the public is not so strict in the social sciences and humanities, and social scientists and humanities people would accept the general public as a natural audience, while this is not the case for hard scientists. There is a more strict separation of science and the public.
So one of the things that came up in your session was how hard it is to survey scientists, how to get a sample of 30% or more.
The response rate are indeed becoming a problem. We have had a response rate of 50% in the male surveys in Germany and UK, but in the United States it's more difficult. We had 33, I think. And if we go to online surveys, which is much more economical, the response rate drops to something like 20%. So in the United States, we had 20% in several surveys. And you have to work very hard. You have to send 5 reminders, and you get angry emails after the reminders and so on. Okay, that's our job, to find ways to increase the response rate as much as possible. But it's hard.
So what's your case? What do you tell scientists? Why should they participate in these surveys?
I think many scientists really find it interesting once they have started, because they start thinking about what they are doing without thinking about it. And sometimes you get very enthusiastic emails saying, oh, this, the kind of questions you put forward showed me that there are other ways of thinking about this subject. And others are just nerved and say, well, I have so many things to do. And they send angry emails.
That's Peter Peters. Thanks so much for talking with me.
You're welcome.
That was Hans Peter Peters talking about getting scientists to participate in research about scientists. Thanks for listening to the Science Podcast. I'm Sarah Crespi. Check back on iTunes, the RSS feed, or the Science site for more podcasts from the meeting.